good Thursday morning. Welcome to Perspectives from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan, always good to be with you, and you are always welcome to join the conversation wherever that might lead at 850-414-1234. You can also email perspectives@wfsu.org to join the conversation. And let's talk about the nature of that conversation to kick us off here. Two regimes. It is the life's work of two women, a mother, Teodora Verbitskaya, who wrote about her life from 1920 to 1945, and her daughter, Nadia, a professionally trained artist who painted from memory. And Teodora and Nadia were witnesses to both the Holodomor and the Holocaust in the nation of the Ukraine. And Two Regimes tells what's really a true story of survival under those two regimes, because if you remember from your history text, you had going on simultaneously the horror of Stalin and also Hitler. And before, during, and after the Holodomor of 1932 through 33 and the Holocaust of 1933 through 1945 and World War II, Teodora's Christian family witnessed firsthand the atrocities of those two brutal dictators during their reigns of terror that starved entire populations and, amongst many, many other horrors, forced 7,500 Jews to their deaths at the hands of the Nazis in Soviet Ukraine in 1941. From that came, however, a flood of creativity to capture not just the horror, but also the triumph of the human spirit. We're going to talk about the collection. We're going to talk about the film that this generated and a whole bunch more here on Perspectives. So let's meet some folks who can tell us more about this. And we'll start over here with Eric Clark, CEO of the Foundation for Leon County Schools. It is good to see you, sir.
Thank you for having us.
We also have Mimi Shaw, the finder and owner of the Two Regimes collection, or the co-owner, I guess you could say, right, Mimi?
Absolutely, yes. Myself and Kelly Bowen, yes, sir.
Who also joins us right here, and since you name-checked her, Kelly Bowen, who is the curator of the collection and the co-owner of Two Regimes collection, joins us here.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here, and thank you for helping to tell our story.
It's a pleasure and honor to have you too, Kelly, and Dr. David Gusick, who is FSU art therapy professor, distinguished author, and just about ready to crank out what he claims is going to be that last book, right?
That's another conversation, but it's great to be here.
Good to see you again, David. Let's just start here with Mimi, since this was your kind of idea and you helped to assemble this entire conversation getting started. Talk about the Two Regimes collection. How did you get involved in this? Because just about everybody in town knows you, you know, the connection, BJ's, Party House, all that thing. What got you into this?
Well, I got a phone call one night. I'd been performing all day and it was nighttime and I was about to take everything off, you know, from clowning around. And I got a call from Cornelius Barnhart. And his sister and I, Catherine, we've been Seal the Mime and BJ the Clown forever. And he is an amazing former Disney artist who is a quick sketch. And he called me and he said, he had spent some time with my dad in his studio in up above Helen, Georgia. And he knew of my dad's history as a Buchenwald liberator, one of Patton's radio operators, and knew about his book, Dig and Dig Deep. And he says, you know, I'm working with a guy, and there's this house out in the middle of nowhere outside of Greenville. And I think there's some Holocaust paintings underneath this place. They've been in the dirt and covered up. And, you know, would you be interested in coming on out? And could you come right out? So I was like, yeah. So I didn't change or anything. I just jumped in the car and picked him up. His car was in the shop. And we went out there, and sure enough, underneath this rustic house that was hand-built underneath it for 4 to 6 years, was trunks and trunks of stuff and hundreds of paintings that were covered with, like, a dirty visqueen. And so I was like, oh, my goodness. He said, yeah, there's an estate sale here tomorrow. And all this stuff is for sale upstairs, but I thought you might be interested in what's under this house. And I was like, yeah. So they started to, and these are big images, some of them taller than me. and started to turn them, you know, like pages in a book. And the first one that I saw, I told Kelly, it was like, reminded me of a silent scream, because it's this woman, and it was all in her face and in her hands and the darkness around her. And I saw that, and then I saw another one that was, looked like two soldiers, and that there's a camp, there's prisoners, hundreds of prisoners behind them. And I took a picture of that image. I sent it to my dad at his studio in Georgia, and I said, you know, Dad, I know, are these Holocaust images? And he said, no. He said, those numbers and those letters on the cap and on the pocket, those are Russian. It's a Russian internment camp. And I said, what the heck is a Russian internment camp? I had no idea. I knew nothing about Holodomor. And actually, 10 years into this project, I still didn't understand what Holodomor was. And I came to realize later, as Kelly and I are working on this for now over two decades, that most students don't know what Holodomor was, why it happened, when it happened, and its connection to Holocaust. So I said, you know, what do you think? And Dad was like, oh my goodness, you found something. You need to get it. And so that began this journey.
Oh my gosh. Well, and Kelly Bowen, how did you get involved with this then and team up with Mimi? And how many pieces in this collection were you able to salvage from under that house in Greenville, of all places?
Well, I think the, I'll start backwards. The amount of paintings that we got originally were probably like maybe 60. And through different situations, we now have 118 of them. How I was involved with Mimi is we had recently moved to Tallahassee, and Mimi was a drama teacher. And my daughter was in sixth grade and taking drama. She's now a major in the Air Force, so this was a little while ago. And I used to do film for all the plays that Mimi had. So we became very good friends, and when Mimi had purchased all these, which, by the way, if she had not rescued these, they would have been lost to history because they were underneath the house. They were in awful position. I would have walked away. They were ripped and damaged and termite-eaten. I certainly would have just walked away. So these were headed to the landfill. So her seeing this in the future as to what this could possibly be was huge, and save this collection for future generations.
Well, it's not just the collection itself, but it's also that dramatic story of the mother and the daughter who essentially, Nadia, from memory, created these works. And it went on to become a film, which I believe had its debut back in September, if I am not mistaken.
There was along in these trunks was a termite-eaten Cyrillic Russian manuscript. So that manuscript needed to be interpreted. It was interpreted by a former student of mine from McClay who was able to help us to figure out and understand more and actually find out that there was a connection between the images we were seeing and the manuscript that it was discovered with it. And that was discovered, we didn't even get to the manuscript until about 3 weeks to a month later. But certainly that, it was already titled Two Regimes. It was titled by Teodora Verbitskaya, who was the mother of the artist. So the memoir is written by the mother, and the paintings were painted after the war. The daughter became a literate artist in Cologne and Dusseldorf, and she is fabulous. And she was able to paint from memory, and her mother was able to write and hide her notes as it happened. So it is really actually a one-of-a-kind collection in the world.
Well, before we get to get some input here from David and also Eric on this, we are joined by that filmmaker that we just referenced there, Doug Darlington of Winding Road Films, Florida State University alumni documentary filmmaker, and the creator of the Two Regimes film. Doug, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you, Tom?
Could not be doing better. So what made this, to your way of thinking as a filmmaker, prime fodder for a documentary?
Well, I think they've sort of explained exactly why. I actually knew Mimi for about 30. I've known her about 30 years, and she's a force to be reckoned with. And when she told me about this, I happened to be in Tallahassee on a visit, and I got to meet Nadia. And talking to her is just she's a force too. And she asked me to make sure I make this documentary, and I said I would be glad to. I'd be honored. And when you just read the story, and if you ever get a chance to read the full book, it's just an amazing story of how these women survived all that they went through. And the strength of women, and I say that I'm working with two really strong women, but these women that survived this Holocaust and the Holodomor are just amazing human beings. And I just couldn't let it go. I had to be part of it.
Well, the debut was back in, September, I believe, that you had the inaugural showing of the film, Doug?
We did, yes. And all three of us were there with a lot of nice VIPs, yes.
At the Center for the Advancement of Human Rights, the Center for the Advancement of Human Rights at Florida State University hosted it at the Reuben Askew Students Life Center.
And where is it available right now? Is it out on any kind of other platforms that people can avail themselves of it? Doug, how do you find it?
Actually, it is limited to educational institutions only due to some of the copyright on the music. And I'll let Kelly talk about the music because she's the one that worked out that licensing. But unfortunately, at this point, it is only available to educational schools and the like. However, we do want to do a full feature documentary in the future. That's where our sights are set now that this educational piece is done. But Kelly can talk about Francis LaToro and the beautiful music that takes part in it.
We'll get right to that after this break coming up here on Perspectives as we continue our conversation. And you're invited to 850-414-1234. Talking about the Two Regimes Project, this is very, very much, even though it has international connotations, a homegrown kind of situation where history has literally come home to roost in North Florida, history that nobody knew existed until this great revelation that we're talking about here on the program. By the way, Perspectives also available online at WFSU.org. We archive each show in its entirety. It's typically up within a day or so of when it appears on the radio, and you can check it out, hopefully in perpetuity. Kelly Bowen, the music that was part of the film that Doug Darlington produced there for educational purposes and all, talk about that a little.
Well, actually, this film was actually filmed in 2017 as part of a second successful legislative grant with the Foundation for Leon County Schools. And Doug did a wonderful job developing it, and it sat because we did not have the music rights to be able to do it. 2020, which actually had some silver linings for us, Mimi Shaw was watching a 60-minute segment on Francesco LaToro, who has traveled the world of Italy, who has traveled the world for 30 years collecting music that was created in the labor camps, concentration camps, and gulags from 1933 to 1953. Mimi contacted him immediately, and we found out later from his organization that he received 1,000 emails from that segment. But Francesco LaToro contacted Mimi the next day and said, I'm at your disposal. I love what you're doing, your salvage collection. Ours is a salvage collection, and this music, it allows it to live. So he graciously donated 9 pieces of music that are in this film. And at the end of the film, in the credits, we actually have 4 musicians and a little information about them, about what they had, what camps they were in, and things like that. So this film is only available to educational institutions, and it's available through tworegimes.com/film. And teachers can download. It's free to all educators. You cannot charge for this film. And we just launched it on November 28th.
Oh my gosh! So that is
very new.
Yeah, very very new. Yes. But Eric Clark, what impelled the Foundation for Leon County Schools to take this on as a project? Many many worthy causes out there. Why this one?
Well, I think it was a natural fit for our school system, in that one of the I guess requirements is that Holocaust education has to be taught in public schools in Florida, and I'm sure in other states as well. So this was an opportunity to really be part of something that was, there's nothing like it. As the ladies have said, I mean, it's one of a kind. And the depth that the pictures portray are just something that you cannot even, if you have not seen them, you cannot really speak about them. It's just amazing. But we just wanted to be a part of it. And as everyone has said, Mimi and Kelly, there is no no. They don't know the word no. So they stay on me pretty good to make sure that we're doing what we need to do. And we were very blessed to get a grant from the state of Florida this year, but it is a matching grant. We have to raise $25,000, and so far we've raised about $10,000 of that. So, but I can see this going well. Definitely, I've talked with other education foundations in different school districts, and they're chomping at the bit to become part of this and get involved. And then, like Kelly said, it could be nationwide or even international. As long as it's an educational institution and they agree not to charge, then it's available to them. And I know here in Leon County that we've got several teachers who are planning to put it into their curriculum. So it's going to be really neat. And then one of the, I guess, other things that we're really excited about is we're going to get to take probably 400 middle school and high school students to the state capitol in the third week of April to see some of the paintings, which are going to be on display at the 22nd floor of the state capitol. So we're going to be bringing kids to the capitol. And for many of our children, even though they live in Tallahassee, they've never been to the capitol. They've probably never been to the 22nd floor, but we're going to get to tie it all together and also have the opportunity to let them look at the artwork, because the artwork that is framed, it moves you. It touches your soul.
Well, I think this is a good handoff here to you, Dr. David.
Yeah.
To talk about, you think someone who has undergone this kind of trauma, that these pictures would be dark and dystopian, and certainly there are elements of that in some of the work, but some of it is just so uplifting and positive and just gorgeous.
Well, to put some context in this, I think that's why I was brought in on this, 15, 16 years ago, when I first met Mimi Shaw. Actually, it was Barbara Goldstein who was involved with the Holocaust education. I had been part of the Holocaust Institute at FSU, and I would speak often about the art of the Holocaust as evidentiary support and for resistance, and the value of the art as an opportunity to break through the dehumanization and the objectification that, of course, existed in these camps and in these experiences. And here, Mimi was talking with me, and again, talk about a force of nature. Once I met Mimi, it's, you know, remember Al Pacino in Godfather 3? The more I try to get out, she pulls me back in. So for all of these years, I continue to be involved and get a chance to see this wonderful artwork. And on one level, on the surface, it appears to be somewhat innocuous and somewhat, you know, there's evidence and there's a narrative quality to it. But the message underlying it and the ability for them to create in a time that was, of course, destructive, and they're creating in spite of the situation, for them to be able to demonstrate the value of humanity and living despite all of this. I mean, this is why I think the best way to put it is, you know, we hear numbers all the time, and it inoculates us to what actually occurred during this time. We read a lot of words, and yet we bombarded by these words, but you look at these images and there's a visceral response, a visceral connection to this. These are pieces that could have been done by our next door neighbor. These are pieces that anybody can look at and say, look at the richness and the value of these, but these become real, and these are real people that experience this. And you can't help but look at these and be reawakened to and reconnected to these people that experience this. And that's why it's so valuable to bring it in the schools, so that the kids can see this and say, I can identify with them. This is who we are. And boy, it's just, I can't stop.
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
what has that quality of, it really is like one of Doug's documentaries. It is journalism. It is, this is what happened. This is what we saw.
That's right. That's exactly right. And the connection between Holodomor and what happened in that genocide, and the Holocaust, mm-hmm. and what happened in that genocide. And Dr. Gusick, your ability to make the point that oppression and war, suppression, and people having to live under horrific conditions, not imposed by themselves, but by governments and other, it's amazing, the indomitable spirit of humankind, that people can be. Like Francesco Latorre he's salvaging and restoring pieces that were written on toilet paper or on the bottoms of shoes, and created an entire citadel in Italy. We've been working with him in Italy. We've been working with Harek in Canada, the Holodomor Research Institute of over 40 years, who tells us that this manuscript and these paintings are a gift to Mariupol, Ukraine, because they don't know what happened to those people. This manuscript gives names, gives dates, gives what happened, gives the perspective of this woman and her two children, what they did and how they survived, and then the opportunity for what they said, because we were able to meet the artist and bring her here and reunite her with her works after years of not having them, and asking Doug and begging Doug and my husband and I, Perry Shawi, hosted her, and for her to cry and say, this is my story, and this is the story of millions of people. You have to tell this story. And so we're trying the best that we can, and we have found a friend and a partner. I'm a former teacher. Most of us working on this are educators, people that are writing lesson plans through these grants. They're educators. And Tallahassee has embraced this project. And we are now working with the Safarziriya University in Ukraine. We've been working with Dumas Records, a production on a famous Ukrainian song called A Melody by Miroslav Skorkik. And my nephew, who's a sound healer, has done a fabulous job, Adrian Justin DiMatteo, of taking that piece and using it, Doug, in his credits in a most unique way. Artists are coming together. Educators are coming together. Tallahassee is coming together to work with now three other countries. This manuscript is now going to be produced and published in Ukraine by Safarziriya University, a Sina contract, mm-hmm. of which we will receive 50 books in Cyrillic Russian. But they are saying, Ukraine needs to know this story. And thank you. And, you know, some things happen that are worth far more than what the monetary, you know, everybody's so focused on that. This is millions of people who don't know what happened and don't know what happened to their families.
Well, and the other part of this story, too, and I don't know, Doug, you may want to jump in here, that I am fascinated with is how did these works, Nadia's incredible paintings of what she and her mother experienced through two different tyrannical, oppressive, horrible situations. How did these works wind up under a house in Greenville, Florida? What is the deal on that? How did that occur?
Oh my gosh, that's a story that I don't think we have enough time to. Maybe better than I do. But, you know, it has to do with Nadia's daughter and, you know, getting the pictures there, thinking they were going to move them somewhere else. But when the house went into foreclosure, they just got left behind. And that was really it. I mean, not much more than that, you know, other than they were shuffled from warehouse to warehouse to this to underneath this house. And sadly, forgotten until Mimi, you know, by chance of God, got and found them, you know. And let me say this, too, that Mimi doesn't have to beg much. She just is a force. She can't say nothing. You know,
I think that's why we're all here.
But, so sorry.
You know, and I have to say that right on with David is that I took the history classes. I'm Holocaust, and everything was just numbers. But this story is so personal that you can't read it and not be affected. You can't look at the artwork and not be affected. And my favorite history class was where I got to read a book about letters from people of that era. And it taught you really what the real history was as opposed to what the historians want to tell you. And this is one of those stories. This is a personal letter, really, an 80-page, 100-page letter, but it's a personal letter of somebody's experience. And I don't think there's one person in the world that can't be touched by that.
David, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to just stress something here. In the parallel between the discovery of these paintings underneath the house, you know, there were artists that were in the camps, that were in the ghettos, that created work of what was going on around them. And if they were caught, they would be executed on the spot because the regime knows that art doesn't lie. They know that this is the evidence of what's going on around them. And they didn't expect their art to see the light of day. So when they would be carted off, they would bury these art pieces. They would put them in the door jams of their homes, and they would hide them in the attics thinking that no one was ever going to see them. It was just enough that they put it down on canvas to capture what was going on around them. And so for Mimi to bring this story back in, when we met at Hopkins in 2005 and said, this is where I found them, it was so eerily parallel. Nobody would have suspected that these would see the light of day. If it wasn't for Mimi, if it wasn't for these hundreds of people all over Europe that are finding these paintings and saying, look, this is what happened, this would all be lost. And I think I just can't stress enough how extremely valuable it is to be able to uncover these.
And we actually find out that it is a very rare manuscript. I'm going to let Kelly tell you why. It has been researched through KGB files in Ukraine. And
we were very fortunate in 2019 to work with Yaris Balan at the Canadian Institute of Ukrainian Studies. And they wanted to work with the Zaporizhia University in Ukraine to publish the manuscript in its original. And we had a meeting that was very exciting with myself, Mimi, and the granddaughter who had reached out to Mimi in 2020. 2020 had a lot of silver linings for us. And then three people up in Canada and two professors in Ukraine. Very interesting Zoom meeting, many languages, many insights. Part of those insights was that the Zaporizhia University has published 48 manuscripts. And of those 48 manuscripts, only two of them were not done in the country, one in Canada and Theodora's in the United States. The ones that were done in country were written very guarded with worry of reprisals. And the ones in Canada and the U.S. were written much more freely. Theodora's was also the only one written by a woman. She was an educated woman, which was also very unusual in that time frame. So it was exciting. That book is due to come out, I think, at the beginning of this next year.
They also told us that that this manuscript is the only documentation that proves that the genocide took place not only in the fields, but in the city.
They had mentioned that there was a lot of discussion that the Holodomor, Stalin state-sponsored starvation of the Ukrainian people, only took place in the rural areas. And Theodore's book mentions that this shows what had happened in Mariupol, which was a port city on the Sea of Azov.
And that is where the 7,500 Jews were expatriated from to be exterminated.
This was painted. This was painted by Nadia. So it is written and it is visual.
Is there any fear that because of what is going on with the Ukraine right now, a possible Russian incursion could occur, that again doors will be slammed and history may be, if not irretrievably lost, at least locked up for another who knows how long. Is that something that
I think all the more reason for this project and the more reason for these paintings and the manuscript, because there's always going to be that fear that the doors can close. And if anything, if history proves anything, it's that art can find a way to escape. And that's what's happening.
And there was just a film that was released, Mr. Jones, and they showed that film in Ukraine, and it was stopped.
In Russia.
In Russia. And people were locked in and interrogated, and the film was not shown. We were on a webinar with the filmmaker, mm-hmm. and it was inspiring to hear her speak about how this does inspire artists, filmmakers, to continue this work and how important this work is. It's important for education. It's important for public knowledge. It's important for humanity. We don't want to be in the same position again. We don't want to learn or not learn from the lessons of history.
Yeah, the famous line by Santayana comes winging to mind right now. Talking about the Two Regimes Project, which has a very deep North Florida connection, we'll be right back and discuss it more right here on Perspectives. Don't run off. Hey, we're back on Perspectives talking about the Two Regimes Project, which spawned a film produced by Doug Darlington, and he informs us he has to flee. But first, I wanted to let you have any kind of final comments that you have concerning not just this work, but anything else that you got in the pipeline, Doug, bring more elucidation to our lives. What you got?
Well, gosh, that's a big order. But I don't like to talk about stuff I have in the works. But other than this documentary. So if people want to really find out the full story of how those paintings got underneath the house in North Florida, they'll have to view the documentary. But of course, we're looking for funding as well as looking for those matching grant monies for the grant. And so any help would be great in keeping this story alive, because I feel like, especially what you guys just talked about, what was going on in Ukraine, it's still going on. Ukraine has been under siege really for their entire history, and it hasn't changed. And this story may bring more light to that.
Doug Darlington, thank you for bringing this
of
the story to light. And I know that there will be much more to come. You have a happy holiday, sir. It's really great to hear from you.
Thanks,
Doug.
Tom.
All right.
See you, Kelly. See all you guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Take care, Doug. Kelly, you had something that you were working on here right as we were coming out of the break and wanted to give you a chance to talk about that.
Yes. One other thing I wanted to mention about the film is, which is available to all educational institutions, is it also includes vintage video as well as 100 historical photographs. So Doug has done just an incredible job of putting this all together. And also with this current third legislative grant that we're working with the Foundation for Leon County Schools, we're creating a study guide to go along with this film to help teachers on how to use it and also to be able to provide a platform for genocide. And then one other thing I'd like to mention, I mentioned just earlier that we had the granddaughter of the author had reached out to Mimi in 2020, and we spent all year working on a better translation and that is complete, and we are looking for a publisher for that new book.
I mean, anything that's written in Cyrillic Russian and you have to peel back the layers. Good thing you had a super translator on that one there, Mimi. That helped.
Former student, amazing, amazing young man who was in St. Petersburg and working there, and a top scholar. His dad was a top scholar at Maclay's, Michael Carmarta.
There seems to be just such a gathering of forces in support of these educational efforts. And Eric Clark, I was just thinking a couple seconds ago of a piece we had out this morning. Ken Boutwell here in town with MGT of America, he's helping Barbara Goldstein and the HERC folks with a matching grant. There seems to be more realization that this is something that really needs support. As you said, it is a state mandate, an unfunded one, we will remind everyone. And your organization is just so critical to getting this information out in the minds of students, particularly when it has local resonance. I'm thinking, wow, a local kid who finds out these historic paintings were found right down the road in Greenville, you know, about 50 miles away. That brings it home.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can have that more local aspect to something that's, you know, in Europe, I think that that definitely makes the student understand it better. And folks that go to the Two Regimes website, there are all kinds of resources there for people to purchase. One of the neat things that we do, that we're able to do, is do a traveling banner display that has some of the artwork and tells the story of the artwork. And it goes around to our different schools here in Leon County. Normally they set them up in the media center and they stay there for about a month to 6 weeks. And the students can go in and see them. So that's something, and that's something we're also hopefully going to be able to get the other educational foundations throughout the state of Florida. There are 63 educational foundations that support the public schools in their areas. And we're hoping that they're all going to come on board with this and purchase these things so that they'll have their own set that they can share with their school divisions. But the documentary is something that time is of the essence, quite honestly, because if Doug is able to do live interviews with survivors, most of those folks are in their 80s or probably 90s. So there's going to become a point, it's sort of like our greatest generation of World War II veterans, there comes a point where there are no more because time and age has just made it to where they're not able to be with us anymore. So it's critical that Doug has the resources and the opportunity to interview these people while they're still living. I mean, that's something that needs to be at the forefront because those real life experiences that can be told are something that's, if we don't record them now, we're going to lose them.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point, which is if you do not have that first person veracity, the default on so many people is, you know, well, it never happened. You know, there's no proof. This is all a fabrication and all. This artwork is a testament, certainly.
Certainly.
But to have the actual people who lived through this and survived to talk about it, that's incomparable. There's no substitute for that.
That's everything. That's everything. And that's what happened with my dad, too, at the Battle of the Bulge. Only seven of them made it in. He was able to, in 8 years, write his book and get it done with the help of family. And I just thank the Lord every day. This project has had a life of its own. We are just vessels, really. And we just need to keep networking. And we need to inspire everyone to look around what's happening in the world. And the answer is education. It's education.
What I want to reinforce, though, is that I think everyone who can hear our voice should want to become a part of this. And there's nothing altruistic about giving to this project. It's the opportunity and the thrill and the privilege to be part of this is just amazing. And along with that, to get a chance to get to know Kelly Moen and Mimi Shaw and then Doug Darlington and really get to work with them has become such a privilege. And to be able to provide this and give to this project and see it explode has just been a gift.
Well, and the dollars are used so frugally. There's no huge administrative overhead. Dollars that are given for this project are used for the project, whatever it may entail that the project is needing. So there's not a big staff and those kind of things.
Mimi's not that big.
No. She, her, yes, most definitely. But yeah, I mean, a lot of times donors want their dollars to go straight to the program and don't want to pay for a minister. Well, that in this case, that's exactly what happens. Your dollars are going straight to making this history become available and to continue it because if it's not preserved, there's not going to be a second chance. You know, the old saying is that if we don't learn from our mistakes of the past, we're bound to repeat them in the future. And that's why it's so important that this historical timepiece is preserved, because it needs to be told. Because who's to say that, I mean, you pray every day that something like this would never happen again, but it has in other countries. I mean, there's been genocide since the Holocaust in some of the African countries. So you would think that we would do a better job of sometimes educating people and not repeating mistakes, but that's why it's so important that we continue to get this message out.
And we have an amazing Florida resource here. This was, the artist painted here, lived here, painted here, loved it here, came back here to be reunited with her artwork before she passed, expressed specifically to us as Florida residents, you have to tell this story. And actually, the film for education was filmed at the Leon County School Board office. We went to the back. We blocked it all out in black. We spent 4 days filming three FSU professors who became the actors and actresses for the film through the Reader's Theater that our students are studying in their classroom, and through amazing, brilliant filmmaking that Doug was able to put together of the art, the actors, the words, the manuscript, and then interspersed with Kelly's brilliance and going and Doug together, finding these incredible images, historic images, and getting permission, which took weeks to get permission for over 1,500 images. And the music of Francesco Littoro, the music of Adrian Di Matteo, the music of Miroslav Skorkic. It's incredible what's happening. And we really need for Tallahassee to come together and join us, because other nations are coming together on this project. We have a Florida resource here that can be a leader in education for our state, for the country, and for the world.
And something that is not happening anywhere else right now but here. And so that local aspect is just so critical to getting that kind of support you're talking about, Mimi.
There's a cognizance here, and HERC has had a big part of that, and our congregations have had a big part of that, our rabbis, our churches, our new justice ministry, with all these congregations coming together and looking at what is happening in our community, what is happening in the world, how can we make a difference, and how can we do it together? And that's all we've been doing. It's kind of like a boat, and you keep putting into it, but it's not sinking. And if we can encourage everybody, take a look at tworegimes.com. And we can't thank David enough. We can't thank Eric enough. We can't thank Lucy enough, who stepped forward after having seen the book in education, seen Two Regimes, A Mother's Memoir of Wartime Survival by Teodora Verbitskaya, with paintings by her mother, Nadia Verbitsky. She's been able to fill in those pieces. What are the names of these paintings? When were they painted? What was she thinking? What were the colors? She's also a trained artist, so she's been able to help us with some of these questions that is now 22 years since they were discovered. So we can't thank you enough, Tom, for giving us this voice and allowing us this opportunity to tell everyone what we can about it. And I was very blessed to be able to be on StoryCorps yesterday and to be able to talk about this. And I hope it will become part of their National Archive, and maybe others will hear about it too.
Well, you will definitely have your voice archived in perpetuity in the National Archives, Mimi, and thank you for being a part of that. You're very, very kind. But the other thing I'm thinking of is this strange irony of this particular situation, because we are so politically divided right now. Here are the good guys who are always us. There are the bad guys who are always them. And yet in the case here of Teodora and Nadia, these were diametrically opposed political regimes. Oh, yeah, they may have had their little fling together at the beginning of World War II, but they fell apart. The communists and the National Socialists were diametrically opposed politically, and yet it shows that incredible horrors and oppression can be visited from any point of the political spectrum on those who are considered to be the enemy or lesser than. And perhaps that's the ultimate piece of education that we can derive from this entire project, that all of us need to make sure that we do not fall into this trap, because we're all people and we all have that potential.
And everybody has a voice. Whoever knew that this little voice that was underneath a house in the dirt for years and years and years would see the light of day, and inspire so many other people to find it to be important and to be heard.
Well, let's hear from everyone here at the table in the few moments that we have left here on this Perspectives. And Kelly Bowen, let's talk with you. Any final thoughts that you have here on the two regimes or anything else that comes to mind?
Well, I would just encourage, if you have students who are in school, if your children in school, please have them have their teachers, request the film. It's good not only for social studies, it's good for art, it's good for literature, it's a historical document, and they can get it at Two Regimes, TWOREGIMES.com/film, FILM. And we're following it on with a study guide that will also... And a play.
And Diane Whitney. Mm-hmm. And Guy DiMatteo.
Yep. And then we're also, again, looking for a publisher for our book and, funds for the documentary. So it's an exciting future, and we hope you're willing to join the journey.
Thank you. Dr. David Guzik.
Oh, I just wanted to reflect on what you were pointing out about you have the two regimes and you've got the people stuck in the middle of it all and getting caught up in it. And I think what, again, the art shows us is the opportunity to wrest back the power, to take it back, and to re-empower and rehumanize and de-objectify and demarginalize the people and get a voice again. And I defy anyone to go online and take a look at this art and not be moved by it and reconnect with the people that created it. And that's what my job's been about for 30 years, and to see it here has just been amazing. It's, again, and I just want to reiterate, it's been such a privilege to work with Kelly and Mimi. I am privileged.
Much of the fuel of this, of course, from Foundation for Leon County Schools and Eric Clark.
Well, I think one of the reasons why this does have such a strong educational focus is because Teodora's husband was actually what we considered a superintendent of schools in the Ukraine and in the community that they lived until he was in prison. So when you think about it, it's sort of coming full circle, so to speak. And I'd be remiss if I didn't thank our local Leon County school system here and the local Leon County School Board, as well as Superintendent Rocky Hanna, for allowing this to come into the school division and to support it, and basically with open arms to come and teach this very, very important part of history. So just want to thank them. This is hopefully it can be a total community effort that Tallahassee can be very proud of.
Thank you so much. And Mimi Shaw, you get the last word.
Well, you guys are all amazing. Thank you for coming, and thank you, Tallahassee, for being open and receptive, for allowing Nadia to paint on the streets at a downtown get down. And Tom, thank you again for this interview. Thank you, WFSU and NPR. You guys rock.
Thanks so much, Mimi, and thank you guys for coming on and talk about a homebrew project that has international ramifications. Thanks. And a worldwide audience, we hope, will be coming to your doors very, very soon for that. And happy holidays to everyone here at Perspectives. Produced by WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. Technical assistance, Evan Rossi today. Lydell Rawls back there behind the phones and the emails and all. Also thank Paul Dam and his crew and Kim Kelling, our executive producer. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week, we return to a much-loved WFSU tradition, our holiday music perspectives featuring Tallahassee Symphony Orchestra conductor and music director Darko Boutaras as our guest DJ. We'll catch you all then right here on Perspectives.